Reading from Bhajan Rahasyam, Panchamayam Sadhana, text 13, discussing chanting the holy name Nam Bhajan at the platform of Asakti. Chanting the holy name on the level of attachment. Nishta Ruchi Asakti Bhava. And we heard one verse from Radharas Sudhanidhi. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is revealing the prayer of hope. Ashasya dasyam brishabhanu jayas tire samadhyasya chabhanu jaya kadanu vrindavana kunjavitish saham nuradhe yatitir vaveyam. Devotee prays in the mood of a manjari, or hankering, longing, hankering, hoping. O Radha, O Vrishabhanu Nandini, when will I, with the hope of becoming your maidservant, reside on the bank of the Yamuna as a guest on the pathways of Vrindavan's kunjas? So he's begging for some entrance into Vrindavan. He's hoping, this word asha is there, he's hoping to become maidservant. It says kunjaviti. And kunjaviti is translated as the kunjas, or the viti actually means the terrace. There's some small description. Kunjaviti. He's actually, for example, someone may come to your house if you don't have walls, because kunjas, there's no walls around Vrindavan, at least in those days, Krishna's days. And they could easily walk through the forest. There weren't walls around the forest. You could walk through the forest and go here and there without any blocking. So just imagine this property without a wall around it. Someone could easily walk into the property and sit on the veranda. The front door may be locked, but the veranda is open. There's no doors or walls there. So kunja viti, viti means the terrace or veranda surrounding a kunja. So one acharya describes a kunja, it's something like this. There's on four corners, there's four kadamba trees. And between, of course, going up the kadamba trees, there are creepers. Like these are creepers. Going up this rope and going up this guideline up to the roof, there are creepers. These are madhavi, madhu malati. And then there's, because they're red and white, they're very sweet and fragrant. They're in the spiritual world, and these very same type of creepers will be crawling up the kadamba trees, embracing them. That's in the four corners. Then between the open space between the four trees, in the broad area, that would be filled with some type of bushes, flowering bushes. And the bushes would grow 5, 6, 8 feet high, like bela, juhi, maybe roses. And they would be very tightly growing there, like a hedge type of thing. You see here on this entrance driveway, on both sides of the driveway, there's what we call a hedge, like a wall of green. So just imagine that's just a hedge, but not flower, but it had fragrant flowers. That would be the wall of a kunj. Then you would take your hands like this and push them away, and you could look through what they call the interstices. It's called the interstices. You could look through and see what's going on inside that kunj. So that'd be the walls and the four trees and four corners. And the trees are such that they bend over and join in the middle. Each tree from each corner, the branches bend over. And they form a natural rooftop or canopy. And allow some light. If they want light, then some light comes through. If they don't want light, then no light comes through. Just like if you want light, you open your curtains. If you don't want light, you close your curtains to your room. So you have to do some effort. But if Radha and Krishna are lying in the afternoon in Radhakund in the flower bed, in the middle of that kunja, and they want the lights to go out, then they simply desire, then the trees understanding their desire, because everything's controlled by Yoga Maya, then all the little holes between the leaves, they close up all the holes, and no sun gets through. Close the curtains. The leaves all come together and form a natural curtain. Block out the sun rays, and it becomes dark. Then when they want to see a little bit what's going on, then the trees part a little bit. The canopy, it's kind of like the Houston Astrodome. You know, the Astrodome, they used to have, I don't know if it's still, some field that would cover over and then uncover. So then the branches are like this, letting some light come through, and then they want dark, then they go like this. They come together like this. And they want some light, then they separate. All by Yoga Maya. So Prabhupada Saraswati is writing about Manjari Bhav in this book, Radharasudra Nidhi. And his Bhajan Kutir is still there. Now it's, of course, become a samadhi. But he did bhajan in a few places, but mostly he did bhajan in Kaliyadaha, where Krishna jumped off the Kadamba tree to vanquish the Kaliya serpent. And right behind there's some buildings, and behind those buildings, there's the samadhi of Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur. But that's also the location of his bhajan kutir. So sitting there, he would write about these things. So what he was feeling when he wrote this, his mind was very unsteady because he was doing smaran of different sevas of Srimati Radharani. So this, what Bhaktivinoda is telling here, which is his own experience, when he was chanting the holy name, these verses were coming into his mind. So when we chant the holy name, at our level of Ajatarati Sadaka, we are not, bhava has not appeared or manifested in our heart yet. So when we read these verses, then we chant these verses, longing, when will that day come? As he's using the word kada, when will that day come? When will I ever have an opportunity to realize my own siddhadeha? For example, as a mandri, and attain a service. So then this kunjaviti means this is the location, this is where he is. He's imagining himself. Somehow I've landed in Vrindavan, in Boma Vrindavan, where your pastimes are going on. And I've approached the kunjas. I've entered the forest grove into the bushes of Vrindavan. And I see there's a beautiful Kali Mandir there, a pastime cottage. And there's a nice veranda there. And I've gone and I sat on that veranda. And I'm sitting there, I'm just waiting there. Just like someone may come and sit on the veranda of your house. And you didn't invite him. That's why he says atiti. It says he's a kunjaviti, he's an atiti. He's in the kunja, but he hasn't been invited because everybody else is invited. It's called Sanket Kunj. Sanket Kunj. Sanket means pre-appointed. Indicated. The word Sanket means indicated. It's indicated, it's appointed. Everyone is invited. Of course, the invitations are given in rather novel ways. For example, when Krishna's taking his breakfast, or taking nashta, taking his meal in Vrindavan, in Nandagaon, in the morning, and Radharani goes and the Sakis go and they cook for Krishna in Nandagaon. And then, when the Sakis and Manjaris are serving Krishna his bhoga, then they indicate, sankate means indicate, they indicate or they signal where the meeting kunj will be. And this is a form of invitation. They're inviting Krishna to come to the kunja. So when he puts his hand is on the ground, he's leaning on the ground, and then some manjari will come, and then she'll, with her toe, she'll step on one of his fingers. When she's serving, no one else can see it. She's just serving, and Krishna puts his fingers like this on the floor by where he's eating. And then she comes and steps on this finger. She just touches this finger with her big toe. And that indicates, that's the invitation. She's actually giving invitation. Krishna, because the index finger means this kunja, the middle finger means another kunja, another location. That's already known what the fingers represent. So then she touches, yes, Radharani wants to meet you in this kunj. And then she walks by and just very quickly just steps on that finger. Then he pulls his hand away and slowly, and then she looks at him like this. So there must be invitation. Even Krishna gets an invitation to the kunj to meet Radharani for her service and to receive her service. But this mantra in this verse, Prabhupada is saying that I haven't been invited. I don't have any invitation. I'm just waiting on the veranda, and maybe you'll notice me. And if you notice me, then maybe you'll invite me inside. You say, oh, what are you doing? What do you want? So this is his hope. His hope is that you'll get an invitation. Just like there's some party, and then invitations are being sent out. Then someone says, oh, I got an invitation. Did you get an invitation? Oh, I didn't get an invitation. Oh, really? You didn't get an invitation? Some wedding, someone's having a wedding, that's a very common thing. They send out invitations, RSVP, respondez s'il vous plaît, or whatever it is. I don't know, some kind of French thing. You must know better. So please respond, please come, please indicate your presence or come there. Now, if you don't get invitation, then you feel, oh, how can I, maybe I can just go to that party and stand outside and or sneak in with somebody else, or maybe they can throw their pass over the wall, and they can go in and then throw their pass over the wall, and then I can get it, and I can go in. People do things like that. We used to do that in the Sankirtan. Because to go into these football games, you had to have a ticket. So one guy would buy a ticket, and then he would go in, and he would throw the ticket over the wall, and the other guy would come in with the same ticket. And then another guy, and 10 guys get in one ticket. Devotees are clever, though. So this kunjaviti, uninvited guests. So there's some terrorists outside the kunja. So now the scenario behind this is that Prabhupada is saying, he says, when will I, with the hope of becoming your maidservant, reside on the bank of the Yamuna as a guest on the pathways of Vrindavan's kunjas? It's Vrindavana kunjaviti. But actually this word has a little more particular meaning, which we're elaborating on, viti. Viti means a terrace, a specific terrace. It's not just you're on the roadside. You're actually right at the entrance of the kunj. You're waiting outside. And you're feeling, now I will sit there until I get your mercy. I am a guest. I am just a guest. I have appeared here, but I have not been invited into the kunj. I will come there just when you're about to meet Krishna. And I will beg you to accept me. Please don't neglect or ignore me. Please engage me as your maidservant in the kunjas of Vrindavan when you meet your Priyatam. I am a beggar outside your kunj, and I'm about to die without receiving your mercy. And you're known as Karunamayi. This is one of Radharani's names. You're saturated with Karuna, compassion. You're made of Karuna. And if you don't be kind to me, if you don't show your compassion to me, then you'll be criticized because you're known as Karunamayi. So this verse from Prabhupada Saraswati, it helps increase one's greed. Because right now we say, oh, this seems very distant to me. This seems very foreign to me. But this is actually the sadhya. The sadhya is to attain the eternal service of Radharani. At least if one is inclined in this way. It's called Madhura Rati, Bhavalas Rati, or Manjri Bhav. Then one will very much want to shape his prayers along the lines of these prayers given by Prabhudananda Saraswati, Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami. So this word is there, Ashasya Dasyam, Vrishabhano Jayas. Ashasya. Asha means this hope, great hope. And this is being described here in the purport. It says, which we haven't read, I can just read this part. This verse, Prabhupada Saraswati, is extremely restless. Not attaining the service of Radharani, a great pain has arisen in his heart as he remembers the sweetness of Radharani's pastimes. In other words, he's chanting Nam. He's remembering Radha and Krishna's pastimes, that Radha and Krishna have agreed to meet in a particular kunja in the forest, and Radharani is coming there, and Krishna's coming there. They're about to come down the pathways, and I've also gone there, but I don't have any service there. I haven't been accepted or invited over there, but I'm also standing there. I'm just kind of waiting there on the sidelines. Like there's some drama or some play going on, and everyone's playing a part, but I haven't been assigned a part. I'm just standing in the wings on the side of the stage. So here, he's envisioning himself, hoping against hope. Will I get some service position there? Will Radharani give me an opportunity to render service? This is my hope. It's called Ashabandha. And this is, of course, we're discussing everything that happens at the level of Asakti, Krishna Asakti, which is right before Bhav. So, obviously, it's some great distance away from us. But everything we're doing in the lower level should be saturated with the inspiration of the higher level. So in order to go to the higher level, one must have his eyes on it. You can't walk up a stairs looking backwards. Right? You know, the stairs is there and you're looking backwards. It's very difficult to walk up the stairs. You have to look forward. The stairs are here. You have to look. Oh, yes, I'm going there. You have to have your eyes on your destination. In this case, in the case of bhakti, or the bhakti jina, or the stairs of bhakti, you have to have your eyes on the destination, you have to have your heart on the destination. Embrace the destination, within the heart, and keep the eyes fixed on the destination, and endeavor with mind and heart and senses to attain the desired goal, or the desired destination. But generally, we don't know where we're going. We don't have an idea. We don't have a clear conception. And we're looking backwards. And walking. It's kind of dangerous. Can trip very easily. Crack your head. So, we're hearing about the prayers and symptoms of asakti attachment. And from our level, we're not at that level, otherwise these would be the content of our own prayers. Our own prayers and aspirations and ashabandha. Our own hopes would be the same hopes as these acharyas. And our own prayers would be the same prayers as these acharyas, but in our own words, but with the same conception, or the same goal, or the same idea in mind. But we may not be at that level of asakti. Nevertheless, by hearing their prayers, then we pray to have this mood, that we will someday soon, by their mercy, the mercy of such acharyas as Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Prabodhananda Saraswati, their prayers, as I said, are full of karuna, full of mercy, compassion. By reading their prayers and praying to them, then something of that comes to the heart. Something of the content. Our desires, devotional desires, and our devotional aspirations and hopes begin to take shape around the hopes and desires of these liberated souls. You take on the qualities of your association. You associate with bad men, you become bad. You associate with good men, you become good. You associate with Bhava Bhaktas, you become a Bhava Bhakta. You associate with Premi Bhaktas, you become a Premi Bhakta. You associate with neophytes, you remain a neophyte. It's like this. Satam prasangam mamavirya samvado. This Bhagavatam verse. So then he goes on to discuss this asha, this growing hope. In other words, this asha, this hope, ashabandha, which is a symptom of bhava, it grows. In the beginning we have some hope. Oh, I hope somehow I'll find a guru. I have some interest in Krishna bhakti. I hope I can find a guru. I hope Krishna will direct me to a guru. So there's some hope. And then we maybe attain guru. Then, oh, I hope I'll make advancement. I hope I'll realize something. I hope I'll become a good devotee. I hope I become steady. So hope is very much part of one's life. It doesn't just all of a sudden, boing, manifest at the level of bhava. Now you have ashabandha. Now, oh, this intense hope that binds you. Practically, you're become made of nothing but hope. Prabhupada used to use the term hope against hope. And usually we would say, yes, I am in a hopeless condition. hopeless condition. But he's discussing, this is one word in this verse, and this commentary is discussing that. Now, Prabodhananda Saraswati is realizing his own disqualification to taste such sweetness. So he's becoming agitated by pain and unhappiness. However, a firm hope of one day attaining the eternal service of Radharani is stirring in his heart. So we can see, oh, many devotees in the past, they've attained the service of Radharani. And it's possible. Anything's possible. Our Gurudev said that impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So by Mahant Kripa, by Mahaprabhu Kripa, by Nam Kripa, anything's possible. Because there's unlimited power in Nam. Sarva Shakti. Nam Namakari. Bahuda Nija Sarva Shakti. Nija Sarva Shakti means your own potency, your Surup Shakti. Nija Sarva Shakti. Nija means Surup. Sarup Shakti, Ladini Shakti, Samvit Sandini, everything there is in Nam. So I am chanting this name. Oh, Nam Prabhu, won't you be kind to me? Won't you fill me with this hope? Will I not one day attain such service as the service that Rupa Mandri is having, or the service that Rupa Rati Mandri is having, or the service of Vinod Valeri Mandri, Vishnu Chakravarti? Can't I one day also render such service? And the response is an unequivocal yes. Certainly you'll have this service. Why not? If you desire this and nothing else, then you can attain. So this is stirring in my heart. Yes, one day surely I will attain the eternal service of Radharani, Radhadasyam. I believe it. I have this hope. This is my faith. So one symptom of the Jata Rati Sadaka is Ashabandha. So one who has Rati or Bhav, he has this symptom. This is one of his nine symptoms in nectar devotion, Ashabandha. He has a very firm hope of attaining Bhagavan. Yes, I will attain Bhagavan. Very soon, I will attain. Because Bhava very quickly matures and condenses into Prema. So the ultimate development of this Ashabandha is seen in Mahabhav. Even the Braja Devis, you see that hope, Ashabandha, or hope is something that's there with the bhakta, it's something that's there with the newly initiated, and it's something that's there with Radharani. Even Ashabandha is in that level, in the level of Mahabhav, her pure love. She's hoping, oh, I hope that Krishna will come back. He said, yes, I will return. I am going to Mathura, but surely I will return in a day or two. This is what Krishna was saying. So it's told in the Bhagavatam, the gopis are living on that hope. They're living on it. Like we live on chapatis, rotis, dal. But Radharani is living on Ashabandha. Just the hope. Yes, Krishna, he must keep his word. He will not forsake us. He will not betray us. He promised. I promise, yes, don't worry. I will return in a day or two. And of course, Garga Samhita, especially Garga Samhita and other scriptures, they explain how Krishna was repeatedly coming back to Vrindavan. Of course, we get a different view from Bhagavatam because there's different bhavas wanting to be expressed there. But he went to Mathura and he stayed there from the age of 11, approximately 11 years old. He went there with Akrura and he stayed for about 17 years. It's pretty easy to figure that out because every year, year after year, who was it attacked? Jarasan was attacking every year, 17 times. So Jarasan was attacking every year. He would get all his soldiers together, then he would attack Mathuranath, Krishna, and Balaram. Then after the 17th attack, he was defeated every time. And the 17th time, then Krishna and Balaram said, oh, look, let's forget it. Let's move everything. So while everybody took rest, and Gopal Champu explains, everybody took rest in Mathura, and when they woke up, they were surrounded by water. They were transported to Dwarka, to an island in the ocean, Dwarkadham. They were simply taking rest, and they woke up. It's like aliens from another planet. They were kidnapped in a UFO, in a spaceship, and taken off to another planet in their sleep. It says, just like that, their palaces, their beds, their televisions, everything, whatever they had in Mathura was just transported by Yoga Maya, was transported to Dwarka. And he woke up in the same bed, same everything, and he looked out the window. Hey, where are the trees? There's all water everywhere. Ocean. Indian Ocean, I suppose. Indian Ocean? What's that ocean? Arabian Sea, I think it's called. Arabian Sea. Or Gulf of Kutch, or whatever it is. So there they were. So, because in 39th chapter, when Krishna was leaving with Akrura, he said, Ayasya iti, I will return. So they had hope of attaining Krishna's service that was maintaining their lives. They have faith in Krishna's words spoken by him when he left for Mathura. Sometimes the acharyas, they ask they pose a question. Who is a greater devotee? The father of Krishna or the father of Ram? The father of Ram is King Dasharath. And the father of Krishna is Nanda Maharaj. So who's greater? Who's a greater devotee? And why? No answers? Why? Because he what? Acha. He enjoyed Krishna as much as he wanted. Anyone else have anything to say? The answer, generally people will say, Indologists and other so-called learned individuals, they will say, King Dasarath is a much greater devotee than Nanda Maharaj. Because when he got the news that his son, Ramachandra, was going to be banished to the kingdom, to the forest from Ayodhya, he immediately died. He gave up his body. He couldn't bear to live. He couldn't bear the pang of separation from his beloved son Ram, and he died on the spot. He collapsed on the ground and left his body. So he's a very great devotee. See how great he is. He couldn't live for a moment without his son. How great is King Dasharath? But Nanda Maharaj, look at this Nanda Maharaj. Krishna left to Mathura, and then he stayed 17 years in Mathura till he was 28. At the age of 28, he went to Dwarka for 100 years. And Nanda Maharaj, he didn't see Krishna for 40 years. He saw him in Kurukshetra when Krishna was about 50. So 40, 50 years, he continued to live. He continued to live and enjoy his life. I lost Krishna. Okay, so what? Life goes on. I have to live. Life is so dear. How can I give up my life? So Dasarath is a much better devotee. This is a general idea. General idea. But actually, our Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas, they give another idea. They say that Nanda Maharaj is lakhs and lakhs and lakhs and lakhs of times greater devotee than King Dasharath. Because King Dasharath, he gave up his body because he couldn't bear the pain. It was too much painful for him. So he just gave up his body. So then, no more pain. Because, for example, if you have a chronic disease, and your chronic disease means long time disease, you're suffering day after day after day. So what's more painful, to have a chronic disease or to get bitten by a mosquito at night and die in the middle of the night? Brain fever. In 1 minute, you have a little pain or a little fever and you die. But someone is dying every day, so much pain. So King Dasharath, he just died. He got the news, your son has been banished by Kaikeyi or whatever it is, Kaikeyi. Kaikeyi's curse, he's been banished. He died. Okay, no more pain. But Nanda Maharaj, he could have done the same thing. Oh, Krishna's left. Oh, I can't bear the pain. Let me die. But what was Nanda Maharaj thinking? He was thinking, if I die, if I give up my body, that will be very good for me. Because I'm suffering tremendously in the absence of my son. In separation from my son, I'm just dying. I'm dying every minute. I'm dying and crying in separation. I'm really dying. But if I give up my body, that will be good for me. But what if Krishna comes back tomorrow? And then he said, who will serve him? Who will feed him? Who will tie his shoes? Who will when he's crying, who will wipe his tears? Who will give him some sweets when his mother spanks him? Who will console him? And when his mother says, you can't have any sweets, and I will go behind her and give some sweets to him. Who will do all these services if I give up my body? So my body belongs to Krishna, not to me. I can't give up my body. It belongs to him. My body is meant for his service. So although it's killing me. Every minute I'm dying in his separation, but I can't give up my body because there is a chance that he may return. And when he returns, I have to be here to serve him because I'm existing for his service. So how can I selfishly give up my body? Although it would be good for me, I won't have to suffer anymore all this pain of separation. It'll be finished once and for all. But no, I will continue to live for 1 year, for 100 years. I'll stay for 1,000 years if I can, by doing that, although I'm dying at every minute in that living, I'm dying at every minute in painful separation. I will continue to endure that pang of separation, that intense pain of separation, with the hope and knowledge that I will be able to give some slight pleasure to Krishna if and when he does return to Vrindavan. This is Nandabhava. Nanda Maharaj ki jaya. So therefore his prema is called Vishuddha Vatsalya prema. Vishuddha prema. It's called Vishuddha prema. It's totally pure. There's not a tinge of selfishness, not a tinge of personal consideration. But Dashrath also has Vatsalya, parental love for Ram. But it is like a sesame seed compared to Himalayas. This is what the Acharyas say. His prema is like a sesame seed, til bija, compared to Himalaya Parvat. Nanda Maharaj's Vatsalya prema, Himalaya Parvat. Dashrath Vatsalya prema, til bija. Samaste, til bija. Sorso Beach. Namaste. Alpa. So this is some amazing viewpoint. This is Braj. Ashlishiva Parvatam Panashtama Madarshana Mamatam Karotava Yatatata Va Vedantan Lampato Mat Prananatasu Seivanapra. So this in the Gopal Champu. This idea of what the gopis were undergoing in their intense love for Krishna. Because rati means attachment, and rati means bhav. In the level of bhav, one becomes very deeply and strongly attached to the object of devotion, to the prem vishay, seva vishay, the object of service, we are the ashray, the shelter of love. So the prem vishay is Krishna, and it's termed that another meaning of the word rati is bondage of hope, because rati means bondage or attachment. So ashabandha, bondage of hope, we're bound with hope, ashabandha. So this anguish, this asha means the anguish to serve Radharani. The distress that a devotee feels at the level of bhav, one feels great distress at the idea that he's so disqualified to taste the Madhurya Rasa of Radha and Krishna. His life airs are flapping like a fish. You ever see, maybe in the ocean, you go to Puri Beach, they catch these fish in a net. They pull the net in. And then they bring the fish up on the beach, and the fish are going, ta, 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 ta. It's called flapping. You know, the muchli, ta, 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 ta. Because they're creatures of the water. And they get their air from the water. They live through the water. Now they're on the beach, on the tata, pulin. And they go, ha, ha. And it's called the death throes. Throes of death. THROES. Throes of death. Death throw. When the soul's about to leave the body, generally, there's kind of an incompatibility here. The soul doesn't want to leave. It's very attached to the body. And the time factor is pulling the soul out. Say, come on, time's up. Soul is saying no. So the arms, it's called flailing. The arms go like this and like that. And he's seen, I think so, we've taken care of people dying. They throw arm like this and like that. It's really, if you've seen when people leave the body, it's, and we'll get to see ourselves also. It's a very, very, very painful thing that someone's pulling you out. So the fish is also doing that because the soul is being yanked out of the fish's body. So it's top, 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 you see. So this is the analogy that the acharyas give. When one comes to the level of bhav, he feels like his life airs are flipping like a fish about to die if he can't attain his desired ashabandha, his desired service, his hope against hope. Oh, Radharani, please, I'm so disqualified. But I've read all these prayers and I've done all this bhajan and this is all I want. But how can I, so fallen, so insignificant, how can I ever attain the eternal loving service of your lotus feet in the kunjas of Vrindavan? I am just an uninvited guest. I am an atithi. Uninvited guest, an atithi. I'm waiting on the terrace outside your kunja. Will you come outside and glance to the right or left and see me and say, who are you? What are you doing there? Oh, Kim Karomi, how may I serve you? How may I please you? Ai Nanda Tanaja, Kinkaram, Kinkaribhav. Right? This is my prayer. You want to serve me? Really? What is your proposal? What type of service do you want to do? Oh, anything. Can I paint your feet? Can I collect some flower? Anything. Carry a message for you? Can I escort you to the kunj? Can I fan you? Anything. Okay, let me think. Let me ask Salita Sakhi. Maybe Rupa Mantri has some idea for you. So this is Ashabandha. We feeling so much pain, yet within the heart is pulling in two directions. On one side of our heart is pulling, hankering. On one side there's the hankering to serve Radharani. But the other side of the heart is a genuine realization of our disqualification. This is the mood of the Bhava Bhakta. This is his Ashabandha. So he feels, oh, my heart, I'd really like to serve. I'd really like to render service. But what am I and who am I and what is my qualification? How can I enter there? Oh, this is hopeless. But it's hopeless. But I have some hope. It's hopeless, but I have a ray of hope. A bondage of hope. And my hope is my guru. Nikunja yuno rati keli sidhe. Yaya libir yuktira pekshaniya. Tatrati daksha dati valavasya. Vande guru sri charanarvinda. My guru is there. Nikunja seva. Nikunja devata. Nikunja devata radha madhava kunja vihari. Prabhupada would sing this song and go into ecstasy. Tears would roll from his eyes. He would tremble. His voice would choke up. He would just sometimes stop and become stunned. That's the eighth symptom of sattvic bhavs called pralaya. He becomes stunned, stumba. No, that's the seventh one, stumba. He becomes stumba like a pillar, like a kamba. Kamba or stumba. We say kamba. Kamba, stumba. He becomes stunned. Jaya. And the devotees are looking. And one pandal program. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. What happened to Prabhupada? So Shruti Kirti saw this and different devotees saw this and wrote about it. So Prabhupada, of course, he suppressed his ecstasies most 99% of the time, but sometimes they were too intense and too great. So this is our hope, this is our ray of hope, that resident of the Nikunja Nivasi, like sometimes they have some title after some great devotees' names. Siddha Krishna Das Govardhan Nivasi. Siddha Krishna Das Govardhan Nivasi. Jaya Krishna Das Sevakunj Nivasi. So our Gurudev is Nikunja Nivasi. Nikunja Nivasi. Nivas means he's a resident. He's very tightly residing there. Nivas. Securely. Nivas. Nikunja Nivasi. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nikunja yuno rati keli siddhai. So that is our hope. We're hopeless. We're in a hopeless state, in a hopeless condition, highly disqualified. That's one honest position of our heart. But the other side of our heart is pulling, but I want this service. My Gurudev is there. And he's telling me to come here. He's saying, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhari. Radha and Krishna are enjoying pastimes in the bushes of Vrindavan. Prabhupada would say, bushes. In the kunjas of Vrindavan. I am there. Are you there? So he's inviting us. We're uninvited. We have no qualification, but his invitation is there. The invitation is coming down. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarsha yuvadu. As we say, and we're trying to submit ourselves. Our submission is partial. It's not complete. Our sharanagata, our quality of surrender, sharanagata, our quality of surrender is not complete. As it becomes complete, the invitation. Now the invitation is being written. Gurudev is writing the invitation, but he hasn't put an envelope in the envelope yet. Because he's waiting for more surrender, and he hasn't put the stamp on it yet. But when the surrender is complete, then he puts the invitation in the envelope, and he puts the stamp on it. Then he sends it. When the Sharanagati is complete. So, as we say, no submission, no permission. No permission, no admission. So now we're trying to position ourselves in such a way that we become submissive. Guru says, do this, and we say, later. And Guru says, do that, and we say, maybe. And Guru says, well, try this. He says, I'll think about it. So in this way, the Guru Agya, we haven't accepted the Guru Agya, the order of the Guru, has not become our life and soul. So this, but the gopis, they also bound by hope. So the ultimate limit of Ashabandha, the bondage of hope, is in Mahabhav, is the gopis. When Krishna is in Pravas Bhav, Pravas means a vas, a residence at a distant place. When he goes to reside in a distant place, like Mathura or Dwaraka, then the gopis, he's separated from the Braja gopis, and they can't live. They really can't live for a moment without Krishna. But because of this Ashabandha, this intense hope, this hope keeps them alive. So as above, so below. As the gopis are being kept alive by their Ashabandha, by their intense hope that Krishna will return. He promised he will return. We, way down here, as above in Braja Gokul and Bhama Vrindavan, as above with the gopis and Krishna and their Mahabhav Prem Leela, so below with us, the conditioned souls, we also have hope, hope against hope, that Krishna will come to us, because he says, Konteya pratijanihi name bhakti pranashiti, declared boldly Arjuna that my devotee never perishes. I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death, Krishna is telling in Gita. He says, I will come to you. I will deliver you. Have hope, have faith. Have vishwas, belief. So as the gopis are hoping, Krishna has gone to Pravas. It's called Durvas or Pravas. He's gone to a distant place. But they have hope. They're bound by that hope. They're living by that hope. They're existing by that hope. Surely Krishna will come to me and accept my love and accept my service. So what are we living by? Chapatis and dal. Yes, that's also necessary. Extremely necessary. But actually the soul lives by hope. Living by the hope that I am so far away from Krishna. Really, Pravas. I'm residing... Krishna is not residing far away from me, but I'm residing far away from Krishna. This is an interesting play. He's right in my heart, Antaryami, super soul. But I'm residing very, very far away from him because I'm not looking at him. He's looking at me, but I'm not looking at him. So if someone is looking at you, but you're looking the other way, that means you're far away from that person. You might as well be a million miles away because you're looking out that way and they're looking at the back of your head. You can't speak, you can't communicate, you can't see. So Krishna's looking our way. He's looking towards us, but we're keeping ourselves at a great distance. But the devotee has hope, like the gopis, that although I'm far removed from Krishna, I have the hope that someday, somehow, somewhere, I will meet Krishna. I will see Krishna eye to eye, face to face, chest to chest. And this is the Ashabandha that keeps the devotee alive. And the level of Kanishta, the Ashabandha is weak. The level of Madhyam, it becomes thicker. And at the level of Madhyam Uttam, it becomes very strong. And at the level of Uttam, is Bhava Bhakti, then it becomes his guiding principle. Ashabandha is his guiding principle. It becomes symptomatic of his very life. It becomes his actual, one of the nine characteristics of his existence, is this Ashabandha, because these nine symptoms of the Bhava Bhakta. So the gopis, they describe how intense their situation was. That when Krishna left Vrindavan to go to Dwarka, that the Braja gopis, they maintain their life airs only with the hope of Krishna's return. And there's a nice analogy in this regard, one acharya gave. Once there was a man in England, and he had a pet dog. And every day, he would put the dog in the car and drive to the beach. To some beach over there. Forget now. Brighton, maybe Brighton Beach or something like that. And then he would run along the beach with the dog. And then he would go back to the car, and the master would get in the car and drive back to the home. But one day, after a couple of years, the master's wife said, look, it's either me or the dog. Something like this. There's some argument. She said, I don't want this dog anymore. You have to get rid of the dog. So then the man, he took the dog for a walk on the beach. And then he let the dog out. And then they were coming back, and he went very fast, and he jumped in the car, and he sped away, left the dog at the beach alone. He jumped in the car by himself, and he sped away very fast. 100 miles an hour, 100 kilometers. And the dog ran for some time, tried to catch the master because of his faith and his attachment. But he couldn't catch. So then he said, what to do? So the dog went back. The dog went back to the beach, and he was very, very sad because he could feel. Dogs have feelings, as you know. They're a living entity, and they have pretty good feelings. So the dog was crying. Oh, my master, where's he gone? Ow, 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 ow. Like this kind of vilap bark. Vilap barking. Lamentation, vilap. Barking and lamentation. Ow, 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 ow. Whatever. It had to be a dog to understand. But he was very sad, so he passed the night. And then the next day, what the dog did, every time a car would pull up and somebody would get out of the car, he would run up to the car. Oh, maybe this is my master. He would run up to the car and he would sniff that man. And then, oh, no, this is not him. Then he would go back. And then another car would come and someone would get out of the car and walk towards the beach. And he would run to the car and sniff. Then he would go back. He spent his whole life like this, just staying at the beach. And he just stayed there living at the beach for the rest of his life, kept smelling, and he kept crying, oh, my master left me here, surely he'll come back. And so this one acharya gave this analogy, that this is how the devotee feels, or how the gopis are feeling, that, oh, Krishna left, but surely he'll come back sometime. And they're looking for any time the wind blows, or they hear the wind blows the bamboo forest, and the bamboos rub together and make some kind of sound, oh, Krishna's come back. Or they hear some thunder, or they see some dust in the sky. Oh, the cows are coming, and Krishna must be returning with the cows. So this was explained. A very nice analogy. This dog that lost its master. So when one loses his master, the dog was only living on the hope, maybe my master will come back. Oh, is this my master? Is this my master? So the Braja gopis, they were feeling separation from Krishna for 90 years. And from the day that Krishna left on the chariot with the Krura, the gopis were wearing the same clothes as the day that Krishna left Vrindavan. And they were crying. They were crying. Their faces were awash with tears. Their whole faces were just wet with tears, and their breasts were wet, and their chests. And what happened was that the dust from the wheels of the chariot, Akura's chariot, when it ran off to Mathura, it kicked up the dust from the roadway. And that dust fell onto the faces of the gopis, fell onto their faces. and onto their breast, and it stuck on their tears and their perspiration. It just stuck there. And the gopis, they didn't wash their bodies for 90 years because they didn't want that dust, because that dust was from the chariot which was carrying Krishna. That dust reminded them of Krishna. So the dust was stuck on their face and on their cloth. The gopis didn't eat or sleep. They're only waiting. When will Krishna come back to Vrindavan? This is told in Gopal Champu. This is the intense purity of the gopis' love. It'd be easy to jump in the Jamuna and give up your life to get rid of the pain of separation. But they're living on the hope. They're living on the hope that Krishna will return, and if he does, we have to be ready and we have to be here to serve him. So this is Ashabandha. So Prabhupada Saraswati is indicating that we should cultivate this mood of hope, that O Radha, O Brishabhana Nandini, when, Kada, when will I, with the hope of becoming your maidservant, reside in Vrindavan along the bank of the Yamuna on the terrace of your kunja? So we hope someday to become Radharani's maidservant, hope against hope. And we pray to our Gurudev for a drop of his kripa. Kripa Bindu Diya, please give me a drop of your mercy, Bindu. And with the one drop of mercy, I can drown in that mercy and attain Radharani's eternal service in the groves of Vrindavan. O Swamini, you are Krishna's most beloved and his worshipper. Please make me successful. Give me an opportunity to perform any tiny service in the worship of your lotus feet. Now, at the end of my life, I am a beggar for your mercy. Please accept me as your unpaid maidservant. If you deprive me of this, your name will be defamed, and I cannot tolerate. And that I cannot tolerate. In other words, you're famous as being compassionate. But if you don't show your compassion to me, then people will say, oh, what is this? You were crying and hoping against hope and crying for so many days and years. Oh Radhe, please. Please give me your service, please. I know I'm disqualified and unqualified, but I have some hope. My guru has given me some hope in this direction. And he's pulled me in this direction. So will you forsake me? Will you leave me all alone? Because then people will say, oh, what is this? He worshipped Radharani. He prayed so much to Radharani. He had so much hope. And she forsook him and didn't reciprocate with him. Oh, how is she Karunamayi? She's not Karunamayi. She's Krura. She's Kruramayi. Krura means cruel. She's Kruramayi and not Karunamayi. She's Krura. And we say Akura. Akura means not cruel. The gopi said, when he came, he said, how are you called Akura? You should be called Krura. You're so cruel. You're taking away the great object of our love. So Radharani, I don't want you to be defamed. I don't want people to call you Kruramayi. You should be called Karunamayi. And please, may I be the first to receive your compassion. So this is the 13th verse of Bhajan Rahasyam. Hare Krishna.